Now I grew up down an old dirt road in a town you wouldn't know. My pops picked the place up for $1,500 back in 1960.
What's up, Wisconsin? Welcome to Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman. I'm Joel Clayfish coming to you live from 217 Wisconsin Avenue, downtown Waukesha. From the Fishbowl, which unfortunately is going through some renovations as we speak. We had a bit of vandalism here. Calvin, when did that happen, that vandalism?
It happened Monday night around 10 p.m.
Yeah, Monday night. Someone allegedly, it's clearly not allegedly, did break out the windows here. But we're still up and running live in the Fishbowl. The number to call is 844-967-2789. You can listen to us on 540 AM WAUK 101 FM, The Shaw. Man, I had a great day today. I started the day out driving to Kaukauna to hunt with my buddy Trent Farrell for the show The Fowl Life. You guys know that I co-host that, and I do some cooking segments for Uncle Ted. Uncle Ted Nugent on the Spirit of the Wild on the Outdoor Channel. So make sure you check that out. Check us out on Spotify, too, if you can't get us in your car or home radio. 540 AM WAUK 101 FM, The Shaw. Of course, we did shoot some geese today, so it was well worth the trip because geese equals food to me. The provider lifestyle from field to table is very important. And today, it's the middle of the rut. And I have to admit, right off the top of the bat, I am not a great deer hunter. I mean, I enjoy hunting deer very much, but I think when I was like in utero, Calvin, when I was a fetus, I think God said to me, would you rather kill big whitetails or kill giant, cool other stuff? And I think I chose other stuff because I've been around this world and the United States and killed some really cool stuff. And I love eating, exotic game and things like that. But when it comes to whitetails, they have absolutely eluded me. I have been one of those guys who has sat and sat and sat, and the deer I do see are just out of range, or they're just beyond my bow comfort level or bow capabilities. And then I had a shoulder injury for a while, so I had to use a crossbow for 1 year, and that was a bit on the, I don't know, I'm not going to say cheating side, but I love my Matthews, and I feel like if I want to pull it back, I was able to shoot a pronghorn antelope in South Dakota that was a Boone and Crockett all time with my vertical bow, so I feel like I really should be able to shoot one, shoot a whitetail, and so I'm not giving up on that. But right now is the heart of the rut, right now, as we speak. They're chasing, they're running around. This is the breeding season for the whitetail deer in Wisconsin, and it's the favorite season for bow hunters across the state, and we've got some of the best per capita and most deer hunters, archery deer hunters of any state in the country, and we have some of the best whitetail here, and that's why I've got Jared Grunewald with me as a guest tonight, and Danielle is actually sitting in the stand, and she's going to be late to the show because she sat in the stand tonight during the rut. But Jared Grunewald is an expert. He makes part of his living is in the industry of whitetail deer. And Jared, am I crazy to think that, first of all, welcome to the show. It's your first time on WAUK.
Thank you.
We'll probably
have you
back at some point. But am I crazy to think that as a hunter, and I consider myself a good hunter, my freezer's full of wild game that I've hunted on my own or with friends, scouted, set up, hunted, and kill the animals, and then I bring them to the table, and I'm actually decent at cooking. That's like really important to me and fun and enjoyable. But am I crazy to think that there's some people who just have it when it comes to deer hunting and some people who don't?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guys that just have that horseshoe right up the rear end that you can't explain how they do it. Every time they go out, it seems like they get a good one, and other guys got to do the grind. They got to put in the grunt work, habitat, food plots, stand placement, things like that to really get a deer pinned down and have the opportunity to have one walk by. A lot of things go into it is, you know, your bucks in the area, what age class are they? Are they mature enough for you? Are they not? Do you have a good buck that you want to shoot that you know you can kill? Do you plan the wind? Do you not? A lot of my business is guys will give me a call after they've had a really tough season of, or a couple of them not seeing deer and not being able to put one on the ground, and then I'll come in and help do habitat work and do stand setups and where they should hunt with which winds, and basically give them the best opportunity to shoot a mature deer. But I think a lot of guys underestimate what a mature deer is and how much, or I should say lack of respect they get. Because I think when you get to a 4.5-year-old buck, something changes inside of them where they know the game. They know what's coming at them. They smelt the smells. They've seen the stands. They've seen the hunters. You know, these animals live out there 365 days a year, and we're out there. Some guys are setting up the day before they want to hunt. So right there, that would tip off a deer of, hey, something's not right here. This isn't my home anymore.
It's like throwing a new couch in their living room.
Yep, exactly. Well, all those smells come into play, and I mean,
how important? Let's talk about scent for a minute. How important is scent actually? I mean, you've got the guys who will say, "Oh, I sit in my stand and I smoke cigarettes and I still shoot big deer." And I've seen it. I've seen them with pictures, and I know they're 2-pack-a-day smokers. How important is the scent game?
I mean, it is. It depends on really what's going on. I mean, mature bucks, your best time to kill them is the rut. That's when they get stupid. They got one thing on their mind, and that's all they care about. And they'll throw bad winds into it and run into smoke or, you know, and a lot of guys just get lucky that way. I know for me, it's never come together like that of where I could just be extremely sweaty and have a lot of scent coming off me, and I get busted right away before I even know it.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of reasons why I wasn't seeing the deer. And then other times a buck will be just in such a rut where he's running down that trail right at you and he doesn't even care what's going on.
Right.
You know, and he might pick his head up once he crosses your path where you walked in, and stop him there, and then he might just turn around. And that happens to a lot of guys of the rush of the rut is it's there in a minute and it's gone in a minute. You either get that shot opportunity or you don't. It's just off the distance. You overlooked a bush to cut down.
But, how long does the rut really last?
I don't know. I noticed this year, I'm an outside-in hunter, so I hunt the edges first. I don't go to my best stands until conditions are right, and I know I have a better opportunity. I lean on trail cameras a lot. I'm always looking for a single doe hitting a scrape. They're kind of ones that will guide you. But I'm an outside in guy, and I'll observe and watch what's going on.
Now,
and
when you say outside in, for somebody who doesn't know what that means, you're hunting the edges first.
Yes, I'm saving my best spots in the woods because your best sits are going to be your first sits in that stand. Your second sit will be good. Your third sit will be okay. And your fourth sit, by then they've got you figured out on what you're trying to do.
Really?
So they will shift. You'll sit that first sift and they'll be there at 10, 15, 20 yards. And you'll be like, oh, they don't smell me. They don't know I'm here. Well, the next time you go into that same spot, they're going to move 5, 10 yards out further. Third time is even further. And by the fourth time, they could be 70 to 100 yards away, knowing that you've been in there and what you're doing, that you're hunting them, essentially. And a mature doe is just as hard to beat as a mature buck. Once she figures you out, she'll tell the neighborhood, hey, I wouldn't go here anymore. Something's going on in our home, and I'm staying away from this area.
The way you're describing it right now makes me feel like a person who has not been extremely successful in archery whitetail deer hunting. Makes me think to myself, I should just give up. How do you ever kill one if that's the case?
I pick the right time. I watch those cold fronts that come in. I watch what the deer are doing. And when I think I have a good shot at sneaking in there and be able to put one down is when I'll make my move. I've had a lot of heartbreak in the stand of missing deer, overshooting deer, undershooting deer. Even hitting them and wounding them and not retrieving them.
That's the worst.
And that is the worst. I mean, that's a gut-wrenching feeling knowing you have blood, you have an arrow with blood on it, and you have no deer to recover.
That is worse. And Danielle Fairman just joined us. How was your hunt tonight?
It was stressful.
Why?
Because, okay, I have a whole story part about this.
All right, we're going to say we got 3 minutes left, so I'm going to go with Jared here for a minute.
Hi.
But when we come back from the break,
nice to meet you.
We're going to talk to Danielle about that. But back to what you were saying, Jared. So how important is it then? Because I have already, you're sitting there saying that, and I'm cringing because I've already broken some of those rules.
Yeah.
I had a good wind, so I went to my best stand, saw a shooter buck, and he did one of those where he's coming to cross, and I'm on the corner of the property line, and he's standing at 10 yards broadside on the neighbor's property, so I'm not going to shoot him there. I'm an ethical hunter.
Yep.
But I'm waiting for him to cross over onto to my property. But, of course, the second he's on my property, he's quartering away so hard I don't really have a shot.
And it could be something just telling him, hey, something's not right.
Something's not right because he's going away instead of following the path he was on. So how important in that case, how important is wind? People say, well, wind is important. You got to make sure. Is it like during the rut, don't hunt it unless you have perfect wind? Or is that one of those cases where they're going to forego a little bit of a sloppy wind because they have different motives?
Yeah, I mean, they'll give up a good wind in chase of a doe. And what they might smell that estrus in the air that you don't smell.
Sure.
And they're going against that crosswind or putting their nose to that way. So he might have saw something he didn't like, or he knew where he was going, and that just wasn't past you.
So let's say you're hunting on a hill, right?
Yep.
Hypothetically, you're hunting.
This sounds like your story, Danielle. But you can preface it. Go ahead.
Okay, we're leading into it. So where I'm hunting, it's like a big old flatland, then it goes down into a big like pit. Well, where they come from normally is where they come like up the hill. It's a good like 3-1. So it's a good slant. And as they come up the hill, they will cross where I need them to cross so I can shoot them. So let's say my wind keeps twirling around me.
Yeah.
Comes at my face and comes behind me, and it does not normally do that. But today it decided to do that.
South winds are all over the
place.
And
I'm like, what is going on? And I'm thinking, okay, is my scent actually going
in the bowl?
Yeah, is it going straight or is it going down the hill now? So if it's a south wind and I'm facing north, what? I'm so annoyed right now.
Well, we're gonna have Jared's answer, but we're gonna have Danielle's complete story when she comes back, and then we're gonna get into grunt calls, rattling, and all the other tricks of the trade, decoys. And we're gonna ask Jared about that when we come back. We'll be right back on Raised in Wisco. Welcome back to Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman. Danielle came right from the deer blind. I came right from the deer blind. And I have to tell you, I was in the blind.
Yeah.
And I knew I had to be here on time to launch the show.
Thank you.
So,
I appreciate that.
Well, no problem. But it ended tonight. Legal shooting hours ended at 6:03. So at 6:01, I'm packing up my stuff, making sure I can make a break for it, take the electric bike back to the house and get in the car and get here on time. And I unzip the back corner. I'm zipping up the blind. It's a pod stand. And I go to zip the back corner, and there's my shooter buck walking down the lane.
No.
Like on the path. If I'd have stayed two more minutes.
No. You never leave early.
What?
Even for a show, you speed.
That's exactly what I told him.
75 instead of 55.
Okay, well,
Calvin could have held the fort down.
Calvin, you could
talk fishing, right?
There were 2 minutes left, and so I thought, I got to get out of here, because I'm kind of psychotic about being on time to things, and I was worried.
It's a very good
trait. It turned out, I was here 20 minutes ahead of time. I could have fully sat there the extra 2 minutes, but it's an 8-pointer outside of the ears. I've never killed one with a vertical, but it was walking right on the path. Would have given me a shot probably in the next minute.
Son of a biscuit.
And when I cracked that window, so now I'm trying to get an arrow back out of the quiver, back into the bow. And of course, while I did that, he took off. I don't know if he heard me, smelled me, but he was off into the marsh.
Heartbreaking.
Yes.
It's a different type of heartbreak.
I was literally sick to my stomach all the way here. But then again, in the bigger grand scheme of things, it's It's a first world problem, that's for sure. Jared Grunewald's here with us, and he does food plotting, land management for folks as part of his career. I'd call him a professional deer hunter. And
cool.
Danielle Fairman, obviously, co-host of Raised in Wisco, she got on the stand tonight. You came in here with a look on your face, too. You had it. What was your experience in the stand tonight? What happened?
Well, it all started this morning at 7:55 when I got a trail cam pick from my Tacticam, and all of a sudden said, hey, it's 7:55. I'm walking right in front of your stand. It was a brand new deer I've never seen before.
Shooter?
Oh, 100% shooter. 100. It had split brow ties and I believe a start of a kicker, but you know, it's kind of blurry. I'll show you. Maybe I'll post it. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, you should post it.
But that just got me excited right away at 7:55. I'm like, oh, heck yeah. But then again,
You were at work at the time?
I was at work, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that work and stuff.
Yeah. I don't understand why this can't be a holiday. It should be a holiday.
Yep.
The rut is a holiday.
But then again, I had another shooter buck come in at 1:55, and then another one again, like around 3 or 3:30. But they both were trailing a doe like a half hour in between. So I see a doe, then all of a sudden I see a buck. So to me,
for my little brain,
24 to 36 hours.
24
that
to 30.
Doe is in heat, and then they move out.
That's why I was like, I have a hot doe. I got to get out there. I don't care. The wind was in my favor, but when I actually sat down, the wind was not in my favor.
So what time did you get off work and get in the stand?
I got off work at 2:30 from Milwaukee, 6 and Wells, and then I did the exact speed limit home.
That's a lie.
I did the exact speed limit all the way to, it was a 45-minute drive, so I got out there like
3:30. Calvin's even laughing in there on that one. Calvin's like, baloney.
The exact.
So you get in the stand.
I get in the stand, I get out
there.
What time? I'll say like 3:30.
Okay.
Like 3:30, and I get up there and knock, and I'm just waiting. And then also I get really tired. And then I tried not to take a nap, and I ended up taking a little nap. But nothing went through on my trail camera, so I'm happy about that.
You literally had to check and see if you missed a buck while you were sleeping in the stand.
Those cameras can miss a lot.
Oh,
and of course,
you had your
safety harness on in the stand while you were sleeping.
I have to.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are the best naps, though.
They are.
Really are.
They are.
Tree stand naps are.
I love it. Man, there's nothing better in the world than a turkey blind nap. You fall asleep in the turkey blind and you wake up to that thing hammering your decoy. And you wake up to that, and then you realize that you're lying on top of your gun, and you got to figure out a way to get up and get the gun out from under you to shoot the bird who's attacking your decoy. They are the best naps out in the field.
They are.
I'm not going to lie. Why are they so good?
It's because
it's nature. And when you wake up from a nap in your house, it's like you're in a grisly mood. You feel like absolute
more
dirt.
Tired than you did
it's
before.
It's the worst. Mm-hmm. Waking up from a nap. Naps are the greatest thing until you wake up from them and you feel like absolute junk.
Yep.
Because when I wake up in the house, I'm like, oh, I could have done the dishes. I could have done this. I could have done that. I could have done this. But if I wake up out on the field, I'm like, ha.
Unless you miss that giant
nothing.
Buck.
Oh, I know.
So and okay, you wake back up.
So I wake back up, and also I see a doe on the bottom of the pit where I'm, area where I'm hunting, bottom of the hill. And I'm like, oh, sweet. This is going to happen. It's going to happen. Nothing. I hear some ruffling. Of course, it's the squirrels. Okay, whatever. We got that going. And then I just hear a whole bunch of commotion next to the farm where I am. Just everything possible. I think they started a tornado. I don't know. It was just loud as heck.
Sounded like a Ford truck driving through the woods.
Like, what are you doing? Are you driving a dozer through the woods? I don't know. But then I couldn't hear nothing. So I'm like, okay, I'm just more alert and everything. And then all of a sudden the wind started changing. I'm like, oh no, the wind's on my face. Do I get down? Then I'm second guessing everything. Do I get down and leave because the wind is changing? But the weather app said it wasn't going to change. It was going to stay the south wind the whole entire time, maybe southeast, which would be fine for me. And then it's just, so how important, Jared, to ease my mind?
It's pretty important to pay attention to the wind. And if it shifts.
So should I have gotten down?
If it shifts or starts to swirl, your best bet is to get down.
Oh, my gosh.
Really?
Yeah. Unless, really? I mean, you can get a hard charging buck in after a doe. I mean, right now, they should be on to breeding their second doe right now.
Second doe?
Second doe.
Wow. How many doe do they breed?
It varies how many doe are in your area.
Little like pimps.
You're getting new bucks that you haven't had on camera uh-huh. before right now. I'm not expecting that to happen for me on my property until October or November.
Jeez.
8th or 9th,
okay.
10th is when the
are you done with this story, or we got to finish it after the break?
I'm done. It's done.
It's just very. So you never saw a buck, is the bottom line.
I never saw a buck.
Well, I did, and I busted him out to get to this radio show because our listeners are so important. We'll be right back. I'm 540 AM, WAUK. You're listening to Raised in Wisco with Joel and Danielle.
I walk the line because you're mine.
To Raise in Wisco on 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM. Listen to us on waukradio.com or find us on Spotify. I love the new decorations of this place. Unfortunately, it was vandalized. I heard you say that in the beginning when I was on my way here, but it's very sad. I don't understand why people...
We're getting
I do not understand people sometimes.
I don't either.
But before the break, we were talking about my epic hunt. Epic failure hunt.
Well, I mean, you don't even know that there was a buck following that doe.
But you had a buck, though.
I did. Well,
it's
no.
So sad.
That was worse. I'd rather never have seen it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Jared Grunewald's with us. He is a professional deer
professional.
Man. When you get paid for something, it makes you a professional.
I'm trying.
Yeah, call you the deer man.
I want to talk about what I call deer gadgets.
Gadgets?
I think like...
Like the ozone on top of your head?
Well, ozonics.
Like does that thing help actually work?
Let's start with that. Does ozonics work?
It's like anything. You know, all those hunting products out there, guys say they work. Other guys try them and say it's bogus.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try ozonics next year, put it to the test. I believe in finding what works. I mean, it's a grind. Everyone thinks it's a rut. They got to be out there right now in poor conditions just because deer are running. There's truth to that when you get desperate, but still stick to your guns, and you got to be diligent and scent control.
Ooh, you want to know my problem with that? So I have these long, luscious locks. I cannot find product to make my hair nice that's sun free. Such a struggle. I know you guys. I'm just talking right now.
It's like a no brainer for guys because, in all reality, you can take whatever scent free shower you want. You can wash all your clothes in scent free stuff, and the biggest thing exuding scent is every time you take a breath. You're breathing out of your mouth is the biggest scent that's coming from you, and you can even chew the chlorophyll gum if you want to. But every breath you take, air from your stomach is coming out of your mouth.
What you ate for lunch or dinner
you're
is coming
not
up.
Stopping it. So no matter, you can keep your ozone, you can what I will
keep
say,
your mask up.
What I will say about ozonics is that if you look at it just from a scientific perspective, the scientific reality is that ozone, which I think is what, O3? I think that's it's like oxygen's O2, ozone's O3, I think. Ozone destroys scent molecules.
Yes.
So ozone and a scent molecule are in a bag. The ozone's going to destroy the scent molecule, therefore the scent will not have a scent. That's true. But I use an ozonics, and it puts out the ozone over your head. And what you're hoping is that you have some kind of umbrella effect that kills the ozone, the scent coming off you hits the ozone layer, and it's killed, and then there's less scent. I think... From a scientific perspective, it's got to cut down on scent to a certain.
I'm sure it helps. Definitely, it helps. But is that the answer?
I have one of the scent lockers, the scent crusher locker.
Yeah, yeah.
I got one of those, but I just took it off and put it the little hosey thing. You know,
the ozone.
Yeah, put it ozonics. In my my locker or my tub, and I just do that. That's pretty much all I do.
Yeah, and you
and
know
I don't wash my hair for like a week.
Yeah, but if you don't wash your hair, it's going to have a different scent than if you wash it with...
Every time you lay down in your bed, that scent.
Yeah, but...
But no, okay, this is how... I'm going to call myself a great girlfriend because about a month and a, about a month and a half, I changed this.
I'm glad you give yourself so many personal titles here. I'm glad you give yourself your personal awards and titles.
Hey, someone has to.
Someone has to.
Why not me? I changed the scent-free laundry detergent and dryer sheets.
Yeah.
And then we change all our sheets and we change all our pillowcases. We like wash everything again. And then it's just like, I want to smell my lavender. I want to smell my snuggle. But I can't because I'm like, okay, what about a deer? I want to eat food. I need food.
You don't have to be that crazy with it.
If I'm going to work, though, I will use scent-free deodorant instead of the deodorant I like to use.
That's what I do. Starting October 20th, when I'm going to get really serious about making some moves and getting closer into where I think a buck might be chasing a doe or be bedded. I will start with scent-free deodorant every time I shower, the shampoo, the whole nine yards.
See, and I have been fighting to keep my hair ever since I was 30 years old. I'm 51 now, and I still have a head of hair. And I attribute it to my Rogaine in every morning and every night and every other day, 20 minutes with an infrared light helmet.
No, you do not.
I really do. I do. And I still have my hair.
Oh,
so
my
make fun of it if you like.
I'm 51, fun of it.
I've still got my dark hair.
There's just a set. I have a new vision of you now.
Well, I'll show you a picture of the helmet sometime and you'll have a newer vision of my stormtrooper look. But I use a shampoo that I forego, and Danielle's right. The crap that you have to use, the scent-free crap, is crap. It is not like healthy skin, healthy hair stuff.
No, it's not. It's a lot of chemical.
You might as well just have a scent-free bar of soap and wash your hair with that.
Oh my God, a bar of soap, absolutely not.
But let's talk about, I want to get into some of the other gadgets, and I call them gadgets because they're all in my backpack every time I hunt. The doe bleat.
Never leave without a doe bleat, a grunt.
A grunt call, that's a gadget.
Your rattle.
Rattlers.
Yeah.
Okay, come on. On with those. I will grunt. I'll grunt. I'm sitting there and that over and over and over and over and over. I've called geese, I've called turkeys, and I've seen geese and ducks turn on a dime, and I've seen turkeys come running to a call.
I have never seen
a deer come in on a call.
It's a totally different scenario because that deer has to be wanting that communication.
So when do you use each of those?
So I'll do contact grunts.
What does that mean?
Either just a rap, rap, rap.
Rap.
That's technically a grunting call. But if I see a buck, I don't really like to blind call because you don't know what's around you, how close something is to you. And that buck might interpret it as, I don't want to deal with that. I'm just going to walk away. Other bucks...
So you won't use a grunt call until you see a buck.
Yes. So when I see a buck and I'm watching him and I'm watching his body language and how he's moving. And if he's walking away to me, I'll give him a grunt. And as soon as he looks at me, I stop. That's it right there. One. And then he's going to make his decision if he's going to move on or if he's going to come to you. If he starts coming to you,
What about that thing? When do you use that?
That's a certain type of buck has to be aggressive towards that.
Oh,
has to want to fight. And it's
what if I'm ready? I'm just like, get you.
You can be, but I mean I've actually rattled.
So let's go through each one meticulously because I want to know.
Oh, sorry.
Grunt call, use a grunt call when a buck that you see is losing interest and see if that grunt changes his mind or turns him around to come back to you and then stop.
Yeah, and you can. Once you make that contact and he looks your way, don't call, don't do anything. Just watch his body language and what he does. Because he might tense up and he might start walking toward you, or he might just say, you know what, I'm away. And there's a lot of good bucks. You could have a 150-inch deer that's docile, that's not doesn't want to fight. He doesn't want that attention.
Yeah.
He just cares about one thing, where you could have a 140, he's ready to go. He wants to come into that, and he will do whatever he can to find where that came from. The problem with grunting is you're up in a tree, 18 to 20 feet.
Yeah, that's not natural.
They are signal locators almost like bats. You call, you rattle, they know right where that is. Oh. They know it's not coming from the ground. So if you're going to rattle, take a rope, tie your antlers to it, put it to the ground, oh, let it hit those leaves and give it that natural attraction of something's right here. Huh. And that buck is going to find that spot and he's going to look for it.
When do you rattle? So you, we took care of when you grunt. When do you rattle?
So the best time to rattle is October, end of October. They're getting that aggression stage.
Now, do you rattle blind?
Wait, are my deer aggressive right now? Because you know, because you're there, but like.
Yeah, it varies on what you type. And that's where you grunt and you can figure out. So I watched, this was, I think, Sunday night. You know, it's 70-some degrees, mm-hmm. just getting down or so, 65, whatever it would be. I watched my target buck get up out of his bed. He was 200 yards away, and I could see him from where I was at. And he walked another 200 yards north, and he was directly in front of me, and I just grunted and grunted just to get his attention. And he looked my way. I stopped, and I was like, okay, well, we'll see what he does with antlers because he might need a little bit more convincing than just a grunt. And I knew he couldn't see me or where I was coming from, and it was kind of a hill behind me, a hayfield.
Sure.
And so I started just rattling, and I'm not banging them together, grinding them, causing a scene. I'm lightly just tickling them, little big clash here, small clash, trying to figure out what he's wants to do. And this had been a buck that had already been shot once this year.
Oh.
And he's still alive. It's a non-vital shot. Actually, he's shot by Kyle Schmidt, so you can ask him about it when he comes on. But he wanted nothing to do with it. So it could have been he's won a shot once already, so he doesn't want to fight. He's going to lay low this year. Grunting isn't going to work. Rattling isn't going to work on him. Now, in a week, that might change, and he might come in on a grunt because he knows little bucks are pushing off his does.
Mm.
So he might want to fight then. Mm. It all varies on when they want
but
to.
You'll blind rattle, but you won't blindly grunt.
Yes, because when I rattle, I'm going slow. I'm soft. I'm not
tickling.
I'm just tickling them just to see what's going on because
tickle, tickle.
If you have a location where you have that natural sound, bucks do that all the time. They spar. They play with each other. It's not always physical aggression. But what it is when you get to this time of year, the buck hears that and he thinks, okay, is this a real fight? Mm. Is this just tickling? I got to check it out because I want to see what's going on in my neighborhood, right?
You like you're saying right like I should know the answer to that.
Well, yeah.
Sure, all Jared.
I'm envisioning is just two bucks just tickle, tickle.
They do. If you watch them, they don't do like they do on TV, and this is where the hunting industry
I do
gets.
I not know how to respond to that thing. You know?
It's not true tickling.
Have no idea.
Daniel, it's not like, let's tickle each other.
Oh, I got you there, little guy.
They just throw each other's heads at each other, and It could be a long drawn out. It could be 20 seconds.
I'm sorry.
I'm glad we're having such a serious conversation about whitetail deer hunting right now.
Okay.
So
base layers.
So if I've done all these things and I've never seen or heard a deer respond to it. And my 15-year-old nephew was out tonight. He's like, yeah, I grunted in a buck. And I think to myself, yeah, right. Sure you did. Sure you grunted in a buck. But he was, you know, I don't doubt he did. I think that just never happens for me. But so there is a subtle difference between when you're using a grunt call and when you're rattling.
Yeah, your rattling has to be kind of with the times on what's going on. Mm-mm. You can't just go out there early October rattle. You can't go out there gun season and rattle. It's not going to work.
So is the rut that, I mean, it's definitely over by the gun season?
No, they can definitely rut into it. I mean, your first doe can come into estrus early October. Well, I shouldn't say early October, late October into early December. That's a huge window. And I think, in my personal opinion, it's age-related. It's like an adolescent girl getting her, you know what, the first time.
No.
What? Every girl's different.
What are you
different.
Talking about?
Everybody's different, so their body has to be. It's just anatomy.
Yeah. So tell me, if you had to look at a calendar, as somebody who studies this very carefully, and would you say the real rut is 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month?
It's 3 to 4 weeks.
And what calendar period is that?
I usually go off of, from what I've seen on camera and seen in the field, it's October, you know, 26th through November 26th is when you're going to have that flurry. And it's not a steady, like, every day it's a flurry. That's why you get bucks that will run.
Because it depends which doe is in estrus at that time.
Yeah. So your homegrown bucks are going to try to breed his does locally first. And when he thinks they're done, he's going to move on. But they're not all happening day after day, hour after hour. Sure. It's a roller coaster. That's why you'll see a flurry of pictures one day, nothing the next. And you'll wonder where they are.
And here we are. We've got one segment left coming up. And we're going to talk about rain, how rain affects the rut, if it does affect the rut. And we'll be right back on 5:40 a.m. WUK.
And you know what? Not so much the heat, it's the gosh darn humidity. You know, when you sit there in the bed and you go to reach for the water on the nightstand and you slide right out of bed and the wife.
I feel like I had to play this.
It's definitely a good call for the heart of the rut. The 30 point buck.
The 30 point buck.
Welcome back to Raised in Wisco on 5:40 a.m. WAUK. When we were going into the break, I almost said 15:10 a.m. WAUK.
You did.
WAUK used to be 15:10 a.m. and it was the very first job I ever had in media. I was 15 years old. 15 years old. I was a student at Waukesha North High School. I was the board op for WAUK, and I did the weather reports on the weekend.
Oh, wow.
My first experience was at WAUK. Now I'm old.
You're not old.
Back at WAUK, 5:40 a.m. Danielle Fairman, Joel Clayfish, Raised in Wisco, the fastest growing show in the entire state of Wisconsin.
Entire state. We're on the rise.
The best show.
Why did you do it like that?
1 hour of radio.
That's a bold statement. I mean, you're coming out of the gate firing. Like, you know it. You're
great. Look at us. Look, you're here.
Have you
not been
here the last 45 minutes, Jared? You can see.
I'm only two bush lights in, so.
You cannot feel the greatness that is in this room, in the fishbowl. The fishbowl, which has got a blocked view right now because the window was knocked out. I'm going to get right back to business because I still have a bunch of questions, and we're going to have Jared back.
And I have another question to add on to your question.
Okay. You want to do your first question first?
Oh, sure.
Go ahead.
Decoys. Doe decoy.
Love them.
That was on my... Doe or buck decoy?
Both.
When? Huh. What do you mean, when? I need specifics, I am Jared.
This is like stressing me out.
I know, because now you think of all these... These accoutrements that you can use in the field.
Yeah.
When to use a doe, when to use a buck.
If you're using a decoy, you want to put it in a place where a doe isn't going to get interested in it, curious about it, and go up and sniff it and smell it, because she'll blow you up. Ooh. She will blow that decoy up.
Just shoot the doe.
Or you could, but that's not what you're after right now. Mm. If you're after a good mature deer... A shooter buck, you're not going to shoot a doe right then and there.
I feel like I would not shoot a doe right now.
Maybe no.
Well, maybe because I only have a couple doe.
Eating
meat?
Deer.
I'll tell you this. I was sitting in the stand. I got three trail cameras on one food plot in the woods. And I was like, oh, man, I should get a lot of pictures, right?
Mm-hmm.
I got pictures of the three deer that were 20 yards by me. But I saw 16 deer from the stand. And they were does and bucks just chasing each other around. So... I know what my doe ratio to buck ratio is.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I know there's going to be a lot more competition. So right now, I'm not going to shoot a doe.
You're not going to take one out of the competition, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to shoot a doe.
If it's raining, hunt or no hunt?
Hunt.
Like tomorrow at 10
a.m. during the rain.
Yes. It'll vary on how hard it is. If it's 30-mile-an-hour winds and it's just a monsoon, don't go. Sleep in, do whatever. I prefer a good wind of 15 to 20...
What?
5-30 miles an hour.
They're not betting down.
That's a good wind.
Stiff wind.
But without rain. If there's rain involved and it's coming down, then no, I'll stay out.
Because it's too quiet and they're too nervous?
Yeah, I mean, they're still moving around.
What if it's just a gentle rain or a steady rain?
That's a beautiful time to go.
What?
Just like ducky weather.
Is that because it's knocking your scent down? Is that part of it as well?
Yeah, I mean, it'll knock your scent down. But, I mean, that's just, the deer are going to move. They're hungry. They got to eat. They got to live their life, and they're going to move in whatever weather they feel like.
I am learning so much.
Let them live their life. Me too.
I've sat on beautiful, gorgeous days where there's zero wind and seen nothing. And I've sat in 20-mile-an-hour winds where it's a little bit of rain, And I've seen more deer than I did on the beautiful day.
What about snacks? So if I...
I didn't see that one coming, but...
What so about...
If I snacks
for the deer? Because you can't bait in the area we're hunting, but...
No, yeah.
If you have a gun, then snacks, yes. But no, if I'm hunting like, all day sit...
Like sour cream and onion chips. If I want sour cream and onion chips or barbecue chips...
Then if...
They're going to smell those, aren't they?
Yeah, I would not.
So what about a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? What if it's a cherry peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
What about a green apple vape?
Maybe. That might do the trick. I don't know. When I'm in the stand, I chew green apple skull, so...
Just because I don't like green apples.
It's because it's a mental thing. It's an apple thing. Yeah. Like.
Man.
So, okay. I've got... we have a few more that we have to get through because the show is going to be over very quick.
I'm
so,
going to stop talking.
No, you don't have to stop talking. You can keep laughing. That's one of the great reasons you're the co-host of the show is because you bring some levity. Because I can get a little serious about things.
You can.
So, morning or afternoon during the rut? Or I'm going to throw midday in there because I'm afraid you're going to say midday, and I can't stand sitting in the midday. It drives me bonkers.
I say morning.
This is how you got to look at it. If you have good access into your stand, and I'm talking you're not walking through food where a deer might be.
And you're not crunching
in the early morning. You're not spooking deer going in early morning. Yeah. For me, I can't do that. Everything I walk through, my access points are all through food.
No.
So I wait till first light when I can get to that field and I can look, see, hey, no deer. And then I make my move in. And I've.
So you don't even go in till light.
They call it gray light. It's, you know, that in between where you can still kind of see stuff. But, and I bump way less deer.
So you're not walking in the dark.
No. Huh. I tried it this last time because I had a trail camera in one of my better stands and I had to get that up and running to see what's going on. And I'm like, I'm going to get in there an hour and a half before light and I'm going to show those deer.
Yeah.
I walked in and I kicked up 5 deer and then did not see anything.
Sons of biscuits.
So, gosh, this is just more frustrating.
I know. I'm so stressed.
I struggle to sit in the morning because I feel like that golden hour at the beginning of the day and the golden hour at the end of the day are when you kill everything. But that's my mentality.
That's how I think
from
too.
Waterfowl hunting and from turkey hunting.
That is very true. That is very true. But I'm willing to sacrifice that getting in there an hour before or right at, you know, just being in there
for
shooting
making noise light, and
for
that
making
kind of
noise
thing.
Because I know what I have to walk through. I know what I'm walking into. Your situation might be totally different. And that's what you might have to do. For me, it's not. I go in at gray light. I will sacrifice that first 20, 30 minutes of light to get in there. I'm still in there before that magical hour after.
The golden hour, yeah.
That golden hour.
But I feel like once that golden hour passes, it's virtually impossible for me to sit there.
Yeah, like 10 o'clock.
I'm
like,
not do it. I just sit there like, it's over. Why am I sitting here?
There's a lot of days, too, where I'll sleep in and I won't go out there till 8:30. And I will sit 9 till 1.
The guys who kill the biggest bucks kill them between 10 and 3.
Yeah, and those days are yet to come.
10 and 3?
Yeah.
I leave at 10.
Middle of the day.
Something, what?
They middle of the day.
I've had some of my better sits walking out at 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning
and sitting until
1, 2 o'clock.
See, then I feel bad because Bill and I don't have kids. We have a dog. I feel bad having my dog just sit there day after day.
Well, you go to work, don't you?
Yeah,
tell your husband to watch him.
Yeah.
Take him to doggy daycare.
You stay home.
What do you think my wife tells me? You do the dishes. You do the laundry, man.
I feel like I have to go home and take him out. I feel bad. Guilty.
But yeah,
continue.
Like if you're gonna sit all day, I obviously will sit in a place.
Yeah,
in the morning.
I ain't sitting all day. Look, we gotta have this
so
guy
done.
Back.
Yeah.
We got 10
That's
seconds
it?
Left of the
That's
show.
It.
That's it. That's how fast it goes. Jared Grunewald, great to have you. Danielle Bravo. Fairman, I'm Joel Clayfish. This is Raised in Wisco on 540 AM WAUK 101 FM. The Shaw. We'll see you next week.
To our bunks and I was sitting in the tree stand on a tree day drunk. Wind was blowing 45, temp 30 below. I was freezing to death. Then it started to snow. So I got down from